Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host, as always. And today, we're honored to have Graham Rawlinson, a Salesforce dynamo with over 35 years of experience in sales and sales management. For 27 years, Graham has been at the helm of Progressive Concepts, Inc., the longest-serving Sandler franchise in Canada. He transforms businesses by accelerating their growth and smashing sales targets. With a past in B2B sales at General Electric and a track record of boosting sales by over 300%, even during recessions, Graham's expertise is unparalleled. Whether it's the Sandler sales methodology, executive coaching, or keynote speaking, Graham is the go-to expert. And I've asked Graham to join us here today to share his story and help us all elevate our sales game. So Graham, thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm wonderful. I'm absolutely ecstatic to be on the show today. It's fabulous to be here, and thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, I'm glad we managed to make it happen. Now, before we get into talking about sales and business and that, I'm curious about how did you even get started? Did you come from a family of entrepreneurs? Would you sit around the dinner table and your dad would go, here, son, sell me this pen? No,
actually, I came from a background of you work and you get a trade and you become an engineer. I became an engineer and had no inclination about getting into sales or doing sales, but I was an engineer and project engineer for a while. And then I decided I was wanted to get out of the factory life, if you wish, and get into business. And I went into business with a colleague of mine for many years. But I stumbled into the sales side by helping out one of my very good friends who was a Motorola dealership. And the cellular phone came out at that time, and it was in the early days of cellular technology. And he asked me, would I help him to get this cellular phone side of his business going? So I started helping him, and I really enjoyed selling. I thought it's a great career. It's a great way to get out and meet people and enjoy yourself. So I started selling cellular phones. And at that time, they were extremely expensive. I remember in the days of selling what used to be called the SS6000 was, and I'm going back 35 years ago, the SS6000 was £5,000 35 years ago just to buy the phone. And then it didn't include activation. So that was quite interesting. But I ended up doing that and selling to General Electric Company and the managing director of one of the facilities. And the next day they came on the phone and said, hey, our managing director really enjoyed your interaction yesterday. Would you come and work for us? So that sort of like got me into sales full time at that point.
Got it. So it was just like all sunshine and rainbows from there and on. Like he hired you and you're like, you're the prodigal child. And you're like, oh, or did you have some mistakes and make, what was your learning curve like?
It was quite significant because the interesting point was I was a mechanical engineer joining an electrical company to sell electrical products. But basically it turned into a wonderful opportunity for me because it went through, I stayed with them for basically 12 years in sales at the junior level, but every 18 months I got promoted to sales manager, national sales manager, to business development manager, to general manager. So it all went through that. And that was really as a result of the ability to produce results, I think. You know, if you can produce results for a company, the company identifies you as something, a key individual within the organization. And that helped me get right the way up the ladder fairly quick.
Yeah, 100%. Now, why do you think you were able to produce results and others weren't?
Really, a couple of things, really. First of all, I was passionate about it. I really enjoyed what I was doing, and I was passionate about it. I wanted to show the world at that stage that I was good at what I do. And the other side was having an engineering background and getting into sales, which at that time seems to be a very black magic, black mirror, smoke and mirrors type of approach, to having something which was more formal and more systematic approach to it, which I was used to from the engineering side, really just sort of like made sense. And I think it was that bringing some systematic approach to it really turned it around into getting the results we were looking for. And that actually happened fairly quickly, to my surprise. And I just, as I said before, I just coming out of the engineering world, where I was in drawing offices, drafting offices, and going out to the outside world, where I'm really enjoying and traveling and things like that. It was just a huge improvements in work style, which was really enjoyable for me. As I said, it was enjoyable because it was enjoyable. I was passionate about it. And as a result of that, we were able to get the results.
Yeah. And it sounds like you were really process oriented. Is that a fair estimate?
It is, yeah, because I think one of the issues is when I didn't get the results I wanted to get, and this is when you were saying, did I have any lessons? And I learned an awful lot of lessons. Because in the engineering background, it was if you put something in place and it doesn't work, or it's not working to the correct capacity, then you've got to figure out why and fix it. Right. And then when I got into the sales area, I started obviously learning about sales and doing all the things we need to do to generate business. But when I was getting things like people telling me they wanted to think it over and they'd get back to me and then they never returned the calls and I couldn't get back in to see them. And I started looking at the closing ratio and saying, what is my closing ratio? I want to see how effective I'm being. And then once I started measuring that, I used to then think of it from the other side. Yes, I'm doing better than most of the guys on the team. They're around about 20, 25% closing ratio. This is back 35 years ago or more. And I'm doing 35%, yet I can be all pleased and excited about that. But what used to drive me insane at that time was 65% of the time, it's going nowhere. Why the hell? I can't be that effective if I'm losing 65% of the opportunities. So
right.
That's what really got me into what do I need to do to improve that? Because it was great before we got the quote out or whatever the proposal or whatever it was. And then after that, it went quiet. And that was where I couldn't understand. So that really got me into, okay, what's going on here? What do we need to do? Why is this happening? Start to figure out what we need to do to get around those things. Once we did that, that obviously impacted the results.
And so what would you recommend maybe someone who's starting out in sales or struggling like you, where they're, okay, I'm getting some sort of results, but...
Take it from a point of view is that the results you get in are not necessarily the results you'll always get. You have to look at it from a point of view, if you're not getting the results that you think you should be getting, is don't be blaming anybody else for it. Don't be blaming the prospect or blaming the client. Is look back into yourself and saying, me, there's something I've got to do differently to get a different result.
Right.
And what is it do I need to do? Why did this go off the rails? Why did this not work? And constantly look to review that, because that's, for me, I was always into the situation of my job is to generate revenue. That's what I've got to do. And when we think about it now, that's every business's job is to generate revenue, right?
Right.
And I've got to generate revenue. And if I'm not generating revenue, I'm not generating enough that I'm a good return on investment for the company. They'll
right.
let me go. And I was passionate about it at that time. So I always used to look back and say, okay, what happened here? Why didn't I get the business? Why didn't I close that piece of business? What happened? And that just got me into the situation of always looking to improve. And that's what I wanted to do, is continually improve.
So how would someone who's starting out or struggling that might be listening to this, where would they look first? Where should they look first, so to speak?
I would basically go to the library, first of all, or go to whatever. There's so much information online these days. TED Talks, all the different things you can go online and look at to get some inspiration, first of all, and to also get some ideas and insights. There's lots of information you can get on the internet. There's lots of stuff on YouTube. There's lots of stuff that you can go to to pump yourself up, if you wish, to get yourself really passionate about what you do and learn in the profession. Because I think a lot of salespeople don't look at sales as a proper profession. You don't look at it as that you're in a profession here and you need to really become really good at it. If you've decided to go into sales and this is what you're going to do for the rest of your life, then you better get good at it. So do what you need to do to learn. Listen to other people, listen to podcasts, listen to things like your show, right? So get some insights and start to figure out, what am I doing? What's the assessment of myself? Where am I going wrong? What do I need to do to change to get more productive? First of all, because it really starts with you, right? Mm-hmm. Once you start to realize that I'm in sales, if I'm going to stay in sales, I want to be good at it, because sales is a fabulous profession if you're good at it, because you can make an awful lot of money, a lot more money in sales than you can do in most other professions, unless you're in some very high technology position, doctor, surgeon, this, that, the other.
But even then, I still think They still have to sell themselves. Even if you're a high profile doctor, you still got to sell yourself to get the clients.
Exactly. And it's becoming more evident nowadays. Like years ago, people never used to think lawyers, accountants, engineers, architects, people like that never used to think that you used to have to sell. But what they're finding nowadays is that, hey, we have to sell. We have to, if I'm a lawyer, a solicitor, whatever you want to call them, I need to develop a practice, a business, a bookie business, mm-hmm. the same for an accountant, the same for engineers. Somebody's got to go out and sell those services. And if you buy yourself, then you've got to do it, right?
Yep.
And we know 75% plus of businesses will fail in the first 5 years. And most of that failure is because they weren't able to generate revenue, enough revenue to keep the business and grow the business.
So what are specific skills or behaviors do you feel are important to improve or develop?
Specific skills. I think skills is learning your trade. Is learning how you're going to sell. The reason why I got involved with Sandler is that they came up with a non-traditional approach to selling, which I felt was matched my engineering background and fit in with what I wanted to do rather than be the traditional seller, going out there, trying to qualify, present your solution, whatever that is, and then hopefully trying to close on the back end. So I would turn around and say, first of all, look at selling. As I said before, you've got to get passionate about it. You really need the desire. You've got to be totally committed to doing the behaviors that you need to do. The problem we have with a lot of salespeople when we first meet them is that they're not comfortable doing certain sales behaviors. But unfortunately, most of those uncomfortable behaviors are the ones that actually lead to generating revenue, such as prospecting, cold calling, reaching out to new prospects, networking, getting referrals. But some people are very uncomfortable doing that. I think as a result of that, they rely upon the behaviors which they're comfortable with. Mm. And those, unfortunately, most of those behaviors are not the behaviors that generate revenue. They like putting the presentations together. They like getting ready to go out on a sales trip, but they don't want to do the calls, the introductions and things like that they need to do. They avoid the behaviors which make them uncomfortable. Those are the ones that make you the money.
So to recap, you're saying things like prospecting, cold calling, networking, going out. Sounds like there's a big emphasis on that. That is where a lot of the time and energy and effort, at least in the beginning, is where people struggle. If they've done the right prospecting, if they're really out pressing palms, kissing babies, shaking hands, so to speak, it's not about being a master closer sort of thing. It's about really prospecting and finding the people that need help.
That's right. Yeah, basically, at the end of the day, you've got to find somebody who needs what you do, needs what you provide, whether it's a service or a product. You've got to go out and find them. They don't know how to find you. Yes, there's lots of work going on the internet. There's lots of keyword searches and Google searches and all this type of thing. But when they're finding you, they're also finding your competition. It's when people either contact you or you contact people that you have the opportunity to show them that you're different. And it's the way that you interact. But yes, it's making contact with people and potential prospects. Ideally, what's the ideal prospect look like for your business? How are you going to get towards that ideal prospect? And making contact with that prospect in the best possible way that gives you that meeting that you're looking for.
I love that. Meeting them in the best possible way. So it's not about just, hey, want to buy my stuff? Hey, want to buy my stuff? Hey, buddy, want to buy my stuff? It's meeting them in the best possible way. I think that's a really articulate way of putting it. Yeah. I don't know if I mentioned this or not, but in 2020, I spent a significant sum of money hiring 10 assistants to help me go through all the academic literature. Everybody was arguing about the science of this, the science of that. And the man who raised me worked in applied physics and geology, hard sciences. And so I've helped some clients make a million here. I've helped some clients make 100,000 there. But I've also had one client, we had an extra million to her bottom line and the IRS almost took her out. And so her accounting system that worked really well when she was around a million failed her when she was over 2 million. And so what I learned is that sales alone doesn't guarantee success. And that was a big shock for me. So 2020, everyone's arguing about the science. And I thought, what does the science have to say about business success? So I had these researchers help me go through all the academic literature we'd get our hands on, right? 50, 100 years, hundreds and thousands of studies. from all over the world, Indonesia, Saudi Arabia, Australia, Canada, US, UK, all these places. And we found 8 critical success factors. Mm-hmm. Self-efficacy, market intelligence, strategic planning, marketing strategy, sales strategy and skills, money management, business operations, and business intelligence. And these are the big umbrella categories. And we drilled into each of them, like what makes success and all of these factors. And something that I was really surprised by, and it overlaps with marketing strategy and sales. One of the things, and of course, there's a lot of things, but just speaking to what prospecting you're talking about, it was intense advertising and networking. The keyword being intense, where most people like, oh, I have to call 5 people today. No, you need to call 50 people. You need to call 200 people. You need to call 500 people. You need to get a friend to help you call 500 people because it's about intense activity, but in a palatable way. It's not, and I just love that you brought that up. Can you illustrate a good way to show up versus a bad way to show up? I feel like I gave a good example. Hi, I want to buy my stuff. That's a bad example. Can you give an example of a good way to show up?
It's a good way to basically we say to people, we have a number of field rules that we try to help people understand them and keep the head on straight when they're in front of prospects. And the first rule is people love to buy, they hate being sold. So if you can turn around and be able to help people buy from you rather than trying to sell them something. And the best way of doing that is really find out what they need and what they're looking for. Why did they even invite you in to see them? Why did they let you get through the door? Right? So if you're targeting your ideal prospects, the size, the industry, type of problems and situations that you can help them with, and if they're not using your products or services, these are the likely issues that they're going to be running into and challenges as a result of that. And then going in with having a meeting to find out, are any of these issues that you're trying to overcome, by asking them a lot of sincere questions and really care about trying to help people get a result what they're trying to get in their business. Mm. Most people understand that whatever products or services they have has a benefit when it's going to do something. But they don't really know that from a point of view as well from this person. Why do they need to buy my services? Mm. What is it that they are hoping it's going to be able to do for them in return? And making sure that I'm matching my products and services with what they're really looking for. And not trying to tell them, hey, this is what you need. This is the best thing since sliced bread.
Yes. But
getting them to turn around and say, hey, I'm not sure whether you're having any of these issues. Typically, clients who work with us come to us because they're looking to help overcome ABC7, whatever issues.
Right.
I don't know, are any of those issues for you? If they are, tell me about them. What are those issues?
Let's
dig down deep.
I love that. So most people are showing up and they're selling themselves, even if it's not their product. And if the prospect doesn't buy, they feel personally rejected because they're the singing and dancing bear. And they're really seeking validation. Look at me, I'm so shiny and you want to do business with me. When it actually has nothing to do with you, and 2/3 should be all about the other person. And then the last third should just be ultimately going, hey, this is your problem. This is the situation. This is the kind of solution you said you were looking for. I think this might fit. Do you? Here's why I think it might fit. Would you agree? Is that a rough outline, so to speak? Obviously, we only have an hour or so less.
it's basically very close to it. To create an approach, if you wish. But basically, yes, it's one of those situations where you help people. I'll give you a key word here. You help other people discover that they need you.
Yes. Ooh, that's a good one.
And you get that by asking them questions which are relative to their situation and relative to them, and helping them get them to tell you their story about what's going on and what's going wrong. And not only what's going wrong, but why is it going wrong and what's the impact to them as well. And when they tell you their story and you follow along without having a mindset, what's in it for me as the sales guy, but truly trying to understand exactly what the prospect's experiencing and what they need to do and what they're trying to do to fix the problem, is the key. People love being around people who can help them. If a prospect can see that you're the person who's here to sincerely help them solve their problem, versus trying to sell them something they were looking for.
I love that. What do you feel holds a lot of, like, when you have to train people or when you go into a company and you try trying to turn things around for them, what do you feel often holds them back?
Sometimes a number of different things. Very often we do what we call Salesforce effective and improvements analysis. And very often in first place, they don't have the right people in the right seats, if you wish, in the company. They've got people, they've brought on the wrong people very often. Typically, what we find in our statistical data when we're helping clients is that 75% of sales hires are actually incorrect.
Yes.
So that means 3 out of 4 people you hired are probably not the right people. And they're not going to be able and capable of doing the things that you need them to do in order to be successful in your business. So that's one thing. It goes back to the old Jim Collins book, which is still good today. It was From Good to Great. How do we turn a good company into a great company? And it's a little bit, probably 10 years old now, but the fundamentals of the book are still very valid today. Talks about the leadership. Very often we find, for instance, the sales leader isn't the right sales leader and don't know how to drive sales and how to get the most out of the people. So that then knocks on to the sales team. And very often the sales leader who's done the hiring of the sales team hasn't done a good job of bringing the right people who are not as good as him, because they don't want to be threatened by that person. So as a result, you have a mediocre sales team. And that's what happens. So as Jim Collins says, the who before the what. Make sure you've got the right people in the team. Make sure you've got the right sales leader. And if you have, then you're going to have a more effective sales team overall. But in general, we see that. Most of the teams that we assess, you know, very often a large proportion of the team are not able to do what they need to do to be successful in that business.
100%. I agree with that wholeheartedly. I had a recent experience myself. So our research, like I talked about, one of the categories was sales strategy and skills. And we found that for us, personality dimensions were assertiveness, emotional stability, likability, will to achieve, and openness to experience. And so even just yesterday, I actually had to let somebody go on this one team I'm helping get up and running, because they just are not emotionally stable. They're not coachable. They're not emotionally stable. And I had to, because it's not my team. So I'm partnering with the company, and basically I'm trying to be like an ambassador, so to speak, boots on the ground with an agency they want to work with here. And that was exactly what you said. I had to talk to them. I'm like, listen, we've got to replace them. This is the fourth rehire. And I'm trying to drill into them. Like, we need to hire to these personality traits. Now, if I'm grossly incorrect, let me know. But I feel like this is like these, this, and I had to tell them last night that this person just was not, we had a one-on-one with them. Nothing, like I've done so many one-on-ones in my career, in my life, nothing special about this one. Person disappeared for 2 days. Because they were like, they just couldn't take any feedback. And there was nothing harsh. There was nothing, anything about that. That's a real, I think the who before the what is right. Because if you ask a fish to climb a tree, you're just going to have a lot of stress. And so you need to have people that, like you mentioned, networking requires a certain level of people skills. Asking for sales requires a certain amount of assertiveness. Dealing with 65% of them saying no or more, potentially, if you're not good, requires some emotional stability. And so I agree with that 100-fold. Now, what do you feel, is the future of this industry changing? Like, where are things going? We're obviously facing some geopolitical conditions. There's technology.
Technology is flying in sales now. And we're saying technology, not only technology, but sales has changed more in the last 5 years. And there's so much stuff coming. AI, for one, right? AI is out there and it's coming out in many different forms. We've got sales enablement, which is taking off, which AI is kicking onto sales enablement. A lot of people don't really understand sales enablement, but the different tools that are out there. CRM is a sales enablement tool, but now there's so many tools which are coming out which would go on top of the CRM to help you. Things, examples where, you know, people record all your phone calls. When you're making outbound calls, you record all the phone calls. They record those phone calls, then are done by AI. They turn into a transcript. AI then goes back through the transcript, and then it comes back and tells you, you know, how much time you were spending talking, how much time you engaged the prospect. Did you get the key points across? Did you not get the key points across? Did the prospect sound engaged? Did they sound bored? Did they sound... There's so much coming out at the moment on sales enablement in trying to improve things, different types of tools that are available to you to do that. Gong, there's... you've got ChatGPT, which is out there now, and everybody's jumping onto chat. And you can always tell when you're getting an email from chat because hope this email finds you well. Same line all the time, so now there's humanity. Humanity that you're coming up, which makes the GP chat stuff more human. And but there's just so much going on. There's video emails, right? Where you're recording a video email instead of a normal email that you used to be sending out. And salespeople are not comfortable sitting down trying to do an email, which is a video now. So now they've got to set up a little bit of a studio or they're wondering whether they need lights, action, and a script and all this type of things. But there's just so much coming out at the moment. And if you're a salesperson and you're not keeping up with what's going on, you're going to be left behind very quickly because technology and salespeople now need to become very aware of what technology is available and how they can use that technology to accelerate their growth and to accelerate some of the sales practices that and behaviors that they need to do. For instance, cold calling. I have a lot of clients who are in the digital marketing space and search engine optimization and websites and Google stuff and all that. But they're still cold calling as their primary way to generate business, right? Mm-hmm. And the old days of having to pick up a phone and dial a phone number and wait for somebody to answer and deal with voicemail or deal with automated attendance or deal with the executive assistant who doesn't want to put you through to anybody, right? The person, particularly if you call in on the C-suite, you can, as you said before, it's not about doing 10 calls and taking an all day to do that. It's about being able to do 150 calls in 2 hours by the use of technology, right? Because it's about actually speaking to people. So how can we accelerate the speaking to people quickly and more often and be able to condense that into 2 hours instead of taking a whole day of dialing and dealing with voicemails and leaving voicemails and hoping people are going to return your call?
Yeah, I agree.
So you need to understand what's going on in the sales world and in the sales enablement world and how to use that moving forward to accelerate your growth and accelerate your effectiveness.
And do you think cold calling is going away anytime soon?
It went away for a little while because the first thing, the fax came out years ago, right? Fax machines, so people are doing broadcast fast. Oh, that's going to kill cold calling. And then emails come out. No, nothing still beats you picking up the phone and getting through to somebody and having that conversation. If you think about it, if you're on LinkedIn, if you're on Instagram, you're trying to generate that actual conversation face-to-face, or not face-to-face, but voice-to-voice over the phone, whether it be a Zoom call or whether it be a cold call. You're trying to get that two-way conversation going. I get hundreds of emails every week, people trying to set me up on it. Well, it'll be, want to join you on a Zoom call next week at 2 p.m. Will that work for you on Tuesday? Yeah. I get 10 of those a day. And obviously, we don't even open them anymore. Picking up the phone, dialing, and having an efficient and effective way to do it, dialing to the right type of customer base, your ideal clients, your ideal prospects, using something like Zoom Info to get the direct phone number and not the office phone number, so you reach them with the direct number, is still a good way of doing business. However, we have to be careful depending upon in certain countries and certain states and provinces, unsolicited cold calls are against the law. So in certain countries, it's not an issue. Obviously in the US, in certain states, it's an issue. There's ways of dealing with that.
Right. 100%. I agree. A lot of people don't realize that, again, as all a company is a group of people that solve the pain of another group of people, and they do it with a product or service. And just that intense advertising networking of meeting new people and trying to figure out who is a good fit and who isn't a good fit, and having not just by saying, hey, here's what I got, do you like it, but actually trying to have that conversation to help qualify them is definitely going to win the day no matter what. But you can, I learned this with one of my earliest clients, at least with paid ads, is that once we had things dialed in with paid ads, we go, hey, let's go get 300 new customers. let's write a check. Because we had something that was proven and tested. Now, getting there was, you know, was one thing, but it's the same thing. If you can just call, I can call 200 people today, and out of those, maybe I'll find one customer. Geez, if you do that, how much is a customer worth? If you do that every day of the year, then how many customers would that be? If you had five people do that every day of the year, and how much SEO work would it take to generate that? Like, it just doesn't compare versus going out and hunting and meeting them, meeting those people on your own. So I think that's a great tip. And I don't necessarily think that's going to go away ever, in the sense of, I always say a business is like a black box that solves problems, like a dentist office. I'm hurting, I'm in pain, I'm crying. I go into this black box, I leave smiling, beautiful teeth on the other side. And so as the owner, you should be out to find everybody that in pain that you can help. And I think that's a big one. And you alluded to it before. One of my earlier kind of coaches on this was saying, you got to get people to put their testicle on the table. And that's the dance, right? So this guy's, you know, he's come to see the doctor and he's asking about like herbal med stuff. And the doctor's like, what's going on? And the guy's, I don't want to talk about it. I just want, like, what are your top three herbal meds? And he's like, no, but you, like, what's the problem? If I give you the wrong thing, it could kill you. And he's like, well, I don't. And you just, you got to get the guy to put his swollen testicle on the table so you can talk about it and examine it. What have you tried before? How did this arrive? And then give a proper diagnosis and prescription.
Yes, we still call it sales malpractice, right?
Yeah.
If a doctor prescribes you a treatment without doing the proper testing, blood works, x-rays, MRIs, whatever that may be, CT scans, to find out what's the problem before they prescribe the medication, then they'd be sued for malpractice.
Yes.
But how many salespeople are out there? They have no clue what's wrong with the prospect. They don't understand what's going on with the prospect. And yet they're turning around saying, boy, have I got the cure for you.
100%.
Without even understanding the prospect situation. And unfortunately, that's still going on today.
And I love that.
One of the things you mentioned before, which I wanted to go back to, is you mentioned those eight different things that you analyzed. So you're correct. How many sales, we've worked with thousands of salespeople. So all these salespeople get their sales target for the year, right? Whether it's calendar year or fiscal year and stuff like that. And they all get the sales target. But if you ask a salesperson, what is your sales plan, your written sales plan to achieve your target next year? And what does it contain? I'll guarantee you that 90% of salespeople have never written themselves a sales plan to achieve their target.
I love that. Yeah, just that clarity, right?
You think if you go on Google and write sales plan, all you're going to get is a whole list of spreadsheets with numbers on. If you turn and say, you give this salesperson a $2 million target to achieve next year, how is he going to do it? Or how is she going to do it? What is it going to take? How much is going to come from existing accounts? How much is going to come from new accounts? How many new accounts? All of those things, analyzing the territory, understanding the fiscal requirements of your actual target, how much is existing, how much is new, how many existing accounts can I grow to a certain extent, how many new accounts do we need to get into supplement, how much is business is going to come in next year as a result of my existing customers. You know, nobody, I don't think I've come across, out of all the thousands, I've come across less than 10% of salespeople. When I've asked them, what's your sales plan to achieve your target next year? They all look at you.
Like with blank stares.
As if, what do you mean a sales plan? I've got this number. Yeah, but how are you going
to sell $2 million?
How are you going to hit it? And it's a bit like the businesses, right? If you started a business and you didn't have a business plan, then that's not going to help you too much, right?
100%. Yeah, measure twice, cut once. And I think that's a really, and some people, they're so, If you have roof and ramen covered, meaning you've got your rent paid and you've got like hot noodles so you don't starve to death, at this point, you really want to start focusing on being excellent at everything that you do it right, do it. You get that out of that scarcity mindset. Because like you said, the plan and knowing how you're going to get there is, it can save so much time. But even when we talk about the prescription without diagnosis is malpractice, to prescribe something without diagnosing it. And this is malpractice for them and malpractice for you and your sales team as well. Either if it's for yourself, if you're the rep, or if you have a team, whatever it is, you not only need to know that you can help the client, but you want to prescribe that they'll actually might do business with you. Otherwise, you should just thank them and move on, right? There's the two sides of that. It's not only just a lot of what we've talked, and I'm just saying this for the listeners. a lot of what we've talked about already is talking about, oh, you have to get the client to put their problem in front. You have to make sure that they actually knew what you said, but you also have to acknowledge that you have value too, and don't be over eager for the sale, in the sense of you have to make sure that part of this prospecting qualification process is, are they actually in a position and ready, willing, and able to do the deal? If not, I don't need to spend a whole bunch of time pitching all this stuff. I need to just let them know, give them a tip, move on my way, and find people that are ready. And I think that it's almost like what you said before, and it comes down to percentages. How many people do I have to contact? How many people are out of those might be actually interested, qualified? How many of them are just marketing qualified? How many are sales qualified? Now that I'm down here, how many of these are ready to have me present to them now? And then you go, and if anybody just noticed, if they don't have the video, that's four tiers, layers. And most people, they just show up, they're like, hi, I want to buy my thing. Hi, I want to buy my thing, right?
The thing is, and you mentioned that though, if I ask a salesperson typically, what is your closing ratio? Mm-hmm. Again, I get a bit of a deer in headlights stare. What do you mean? What's your closing ratio? How often do you close? And what is your closing ratio? And then, and when you don't know, and this is for your viewers as well, if you don't understand your closing ratio, then you have no clue what you need to do to generate the business to hit your target this year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because you don't know, it becomes the multiplier. When you turn around and say, how many, first of all, you, let's say you're a new business just starting off, and I want to generate $1 million, €1 million, or whatever it is this year. Okay, so what's an average client worth to you? Mm-hmm. Is it 10,000 euros? So if you need 10, if an average client's worth 10,000 euros or $10,000, then I need 100 clients to generate $1 million. So what does it take to generate 100 clients? What behavior does it take? How many calls? How many face-to-face meetings? How many qualified? How many? You need to work it back, because if you don't know what your qualification or your closing ratio is, then you don't know what the multiplier is, and you don't know where you stand. And that's when it ends up with salespeople doing a lot of sales activity, but right, they don't know whether it's enough.
And you don't know what bottleneck to fix.
That's right. So they don't know whether they're doing enough, and they wait till the last quarter of the year, and now we're going to try and do the hockey stick approach. We're going to try to do a half-hour target in the last 3 months of the year.
And we're going to squeeze and stress out all the reps in the meantime, because that's going to how we're going to get them to produce more. Just blind stress. Let's go.
That's right. It's true. But if they thought about it up front, and they started to think about, what is my closing ratio? How effective am I? Then we start to realize it's all about effectiveness, and it's not about just doing crazy behavior. So how effective am I doing this behavior? What behaviors are the most effective? What are the top five behaviors that I do from a sales behavior point of view that generate revenue? Right? What are those top five behaviors that I do? Whether it's cold call, whether it's networking, whether it's sending out, contacting people through LinkedIn and inbox messages or whatever. Whatever it is for them, what are the top five things you do as a salesperson or as a new business owner? What are the top five things you do that generate revenue in your business? Mm. And focus on them during the time of the day that you can be contacting and interacting with your potential marketplace.
Yeah, Graham, this is such great advice. I've got a couple pages of notes. I'm sure the audience does as well. If not, they may want to re-listen to this interview, make sure they get all the gold out of it. I do want to be respectful of your time. Is there anything I haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
That's hard to say, because we've covered so much ground today.
Mm.
I would, first of all, as a business owner, I think there's some things you need to, first of all, expect more from your sales team. Mm. If you have a sales team working for you, don't think that the results that you get in today are the results that you're only going to get. And don't limit yourself to thinking that if I wanted to get 30%, 40%, 50% growth next year, that's impossible, right? It is possible.
It's possible.
Making sure, and do something to find out, do you have the right people on your team? And are they capable of doing what you want them to do? Those things that we help people with. But also raise your expectations. I found, you mentioned the thing about money in that before. Like, what I'm starting to see today is becoming a bad thing for salespeople. Salespeople, I think, particularly in the B2C, where you're dealing with customers, business to consumer, salespeople are now starting to stop and think they've done their sales job when they send out the quotation.
Yeah, no, you got to supervise the sale.
Salespeople are not closing anymore. They send out the quotes and then leave it for them to contact you back if you want. That's crazy.
That is so crazy.
Maybe some of the reason why is that is because salespeople are becoming less money motivated. And that's going back to the reason why they're becoming less money motivated is because now they're relying upon a better salary. And as a result, a lot of people are not on the commission or they're on a small bonus. So it doesn't really impact their day-to-day living. Like you said before, they can pay the mortgage, they can pay for their holidays, they can pay for the food on the table, and they're satisfied with that. So why do we need to go out and earn an extra $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000? Because I'm happy with what I'm earning today. So salespeople are becoming very complacent about money. They're not becoming as money motivated as they used to be when they were more commission based. And they're becoming very satisfied with their income. And as a result, they think they're doing the job by sending out quotations and not even following up anymore.
I would hope that COVID taught everyone a lesson in the sense that you need to, who knows what tomorrow will bring. And just instead of feeling maybe perhaps that you have to kill yourself 18 hours a day, dedicate every day. We talked about process. These are my hours every day that I dedicate to just maximizing my life in these areas. And every day I'm going to show up, and it doesn't matter how good things are or are not. I had an early retirement and I ended up falling victim to my vices. I smoked a lot of weed, and it was partially because a lot of the things, and I actually have a relative had something similar happen, that they worked a union job for years and they would come home after work, have a couple of beer, watch a hockey game, right? But then they injure their shoulder at work and they get 8 months paid leave for the injury. Now they're just at home all day and they're just drinking all day and right? And all of a sudden now that's become a problem. And so my point here is that when I had my mini retirement, I really found, at least for myself, and this maybe speaks to these sales reps, if anybody's listening and they're like, yeah, I've got a good enough, like, what am I trying to say? You have to find a deeper purpose why, because you may or may not realize that some of the things in your life are just there because you've got these crutches, whether it's a boss that's holding you accountable, whether it's a gym buddy that makes sure you go to the gym every day. You really got to figure out and tap into your deeper why, because otherwise that thing may be removed at some point in time. Oh, I'm fine. I'm coasting. I'm good. And then all of a sudden COVID happens. You're like, oh, I wish I had 6 months worth of money in the bank. These things, right? I'm just focused on the process and your why. And I used to, when I was a kid, saw this movie called Groundhog Day. And it really made an impression on me because this guy, he gets stuck in a time loop. He's like a terrible character. He's not really a good guy. And he just wakes up one day and he's reliving the same day over and over. And the movie's funny. He tries all these ways to get out of it. But at the end of it, he basically submits that this is it. I'm stuck in this time loop. And if I'm going to relive this day every day of my life, then I'm going to make it the best day I can. And he becomes the best person. He learns to play the piano and he learns where to be to catch the kitten that falls out of the tree at this time of day and all this stuff like that. And then suddenly, when he's become the best person he can be, he wakes up and gets the next day. And that made me think, what is the person I would need to be? What sort of 24-hour routine would I need to have, would I need to live, that I could repeat 7 days a week for 80 years? And not only would I love who I become, but I'd love the life that I built. But what would that have to look like? And I think that comes back to you saying they're not necessarily money motivated. Like, you have to be focused on being excellent in what you do, loving what your sport is, and being in it for the grind, the beauty of it, the process, and to optimize that. And I think that hopefully we've inspired some people today. Graham, if people have more questions, if they have more comments, if they want to learn more, if they would like to get in touch with you, what are the best ways for them to reach out?
Probably email would be probably the best way to reach out for most people, because we deal with time differences and things like that. So email or LinkedIn, you can reach out for me on LinkedIn, Graham Rawlinson on LinkedIn. My email address is graham.rawlinson@sandler.com. I'm sure you'll provide information later on that people can get in touch. But I'm very open to getting some feedback and giving some little advice to people to help them get going and overcome some of the issues. And I hope they got something out of today's session with me.
Yeah, 100%. So those listening, go definitely reach out to Graham. Clearly, he walks his talk and knows his stuff. You can find him on LinkedIn at GRAHAMRAWLINSON. And you can email him the same, Graham Rawlinson. GRAHAM dot RAWLINSON at Sandler.com, SANDLER. Graham, thank you so much for coming and sharing. I know you're busy. I know you've got a schedule. I know you've got your own following, your own, you know, family, your own stuff to take care of. Mm-hmm. Thank you for coming and sharing with my audience and I, so we can all perform a little bit better.
Thank you very much for having me on the show, and I look forward to maybe sometime appearing again for you. Thanks very much for your time today.
Yeah, we'd love to have you back.